Former Governor Tony Knowles wanted to put honey buckets into a museum. 20 years later, experts meeting in Anchorage recently heard that they're not going anywhere soon. Johanna Urich reports.
Despite progress and billions spent building water and sewage systems, many villages in remote places like the Yukon-Kuskokwim region still haul water and use a bucket instead of a toilet every day. Bob White with the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation says that even in communities with water systems, buckets are the backup toilet when things break down or freeze up. It smells bad, and hauling it off is, well, icky.
We've tried for, 50 years to get rid of the honey bucket, and we're still using them, and we're reverting back to them in some communities due to engineering solutions that just are overpriced and don't continue to function in the long term without a subsidy.
The good news is that honey bucket villages don't have high rates of diseases associated with handling human waste. Tom Hennessy with the Centers for Disease Control says the real problem lies in diseases associated with not enough washing of hands and bodies when people are rationing their water because they have to haul it.
Specifically, those would be respiratory infections in infants, skin infections in people of all age, and then even severe bacterial infections like meningitis or bloodstream infections are more common in those communities that don't have piped in-home water service.
The challenge before experts attending the meeting held by the Arctic Research Commission and Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is there isn't enough money to build, repair, operate, and maintain centralized water and sewer systems in Alaska's small villages. The state and federal governments are short $70 million annually to meet the most chronic and emergency needs in the bush, and that's only the construction costs. That's why people are looking for cheaper options. Sewage lagoons are common in rural Alaska. Though cheaper than many systems, they're still expensive, and no one knows how well they work, where winters are long and temperatures cold. The studies have not been done. Even when the lagoon appears to be working, operating in rural Alaska can pose logistical challenges. Take Upper Kalskag, where the lagoon is drained into the river every fall, just before freeze-up and after the fishing season. John Nichols with Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium says even if the pump works and the lines are not leaking, there's still a major communications challenge because Lower Kalskag is a few miles downriver from where Upper Kalskag drains its lagoon.
And we found out the hard way that is really critical to have that public outreach, to make sure that everyone knows. Placing flyers doesn't get it done. We need to really communicate with both communities.
Many want to try using natural systems like wetlands and tundra ponds to clean the waste. Besides problems posed by federal laws like the Clean Water Act, there's also little data on how well this would work and the impact on wildlife and subsistence. Villagers already worry about the ducks they hunt, which swim and feed in sewage lagoons. Even if everything works in the sewage lagoon, there's still the huge problem of what to do with the sludge, the solid stuff that sinks and accumulates at the bottom. That technology doesn't exist in small bush villages. But here, there's some good news. Alaskans have an advantage when it comes to composting sludge. We don't have heavy industry, so the final product is not high in heavy metals like it is in the lower 48. Lori Aldrich with the state's Department of Environmental Conservation points to Fairbanks' sludge composting operation.
They sell out of compost every year. Every summer it goes up for sale and people grab it in a hurry for their gardens.
With less space for its sludge in the landfill, Kodiak is now building a composting facility. I'm Johanna Urich.